So we start off our parsha, Parshas Vayetze, and we have Yaakov Avinu, the dramatic leave that he takes from his father's home. And Yaakov Avinu is running away, and he wants to make sure to try to save his own life. And then he goes to sleep, and he wakes up, and he realizes that he has an encounter with God, and he's very startled by this whole encounter. And finally he responds, and he says, Vayider Yaakov Neder Lemer. Yaakov Avinu takes a promise upon himself. He makes a deal with God, so to speak. If God will be with me and he will take care of me, God will take care of me and watch over me and do everything that provide me with everything I need. If God will give me food to sustain myself, drinks to take care of myself, clothing to wear while I'm running away, and then if ultimately I come back and return to the house of my parents unscathed, then what's going to happen? What's his side of the deal? Then I will build an altar and I will sacrifice to God. And says the Pasuk, V'chol asher titen li aser asrenu lach. Not only will I come back and build an altar and build a Beis HaMikdash and bring karbanos and do everything and give back to God for the gratitude that I have for Him saving me and giving me everything that I need to sustain myself in life, but also says Yaakov Avinu, V'chol asher titen li, anything that I acquire throughout my journey, aser asrenu lach, I will give a tenth of that back to God Himself. So this, says the Das Akenim Bali Atosis, who was one of the early Rishonim, he suggests on his commentary on Chumash that this is the first place that we find this institution of Maiser Ksafim. And that's what I want to talk about today. This idea of Maiser Ksafim, of giving a tenth of our money to the poor, of giving a tenth of our money, as we'll see, what we're allowed to spend it on, what we're not. But I think it's a worthy time to talk about this issue. Because many times people ask questions about what are they allowed to use Maaser money for, what are they not allowed to use it, what is the institution of Maaser money, and when should we be giving, when should we not. So this is, says the Das Akenim Bali Atosis, the first person that we find who went ahead and gave Maaser Ksafim was Yaakov Avinu in our parsha, V'chol asher titen li aser asrenu lach. What's interesting is the Rambam says he is not the first person. Yaakov Avinu, contrary to what we thought, Yaakov Avinu was not the first person who came along and offered Maaser Ksafim. This was already in practice before Yaakov Avinu. Let's read the Rambam together. And what's startling about the beginning of this Rambam is, we all know that there are Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach. And what we presume is that these were the seven mitzvahs that were given to Noach, the Noachide laws, but in fact it's not the case. The Rambam says that six of them were given to Adam HaRishon, and the seventh was given to Noach. So it's a little surprising that we call them the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach. It's not true. Really, they were Sheish Mitzvahs to Adam HaRishon, and the seventh was given to Noach. That's just parenthetically a very interesting idea. So the Rambam writes over here, let's look at number Aleph on the source sheet. The Rambam says, Al Shisha Dvarim Nitztava Adam HaRishon. Adam HaRishon was commanded six things. What's very, very fascinating, the Meshech Chachma points out, if you ask anybody, what was the first commandment that Adam HaRishon was given? Anybody know? Don't eat from the Eitz HaDaas, right? That's what everybody would say if they were not so embarrassed to speak up. But I think the answer is everybody would say don't eat from the Eitz HaDaas. Not true. Says the Meshech Chachma, you know what the first commandment Adam HaRishon was given? Mikol Eitz HaGan Achol Tochel. Eat from everything. Enjoy life. Life was given to you to enjoy yourself. The world is here for you to take pleasure from. Adam HaRishon was first told, you know why Jews love to eat? Because that was the first commandment. Mikol Eitz HaGan Achol Tochel. Go and enjoy life and enjoy everything that I'm putting for you in this world. After that, God says to him, well, I'm going to restrict it and tell you, you should enjoy everything except for one treat. But in fact, the first commandment that he was given was, Mikol Eitz HaGan Achol Tochel. Says the Rambam, that was obviously something that was told to Adam HaRishon, but that's not something that was supposed to be for future generations. There were six mitzvahs that were given to Adam HaRishon that were supposed to stick for future generations as well. Says the Rambam, after that, Hosif le-Noach Eiver Menachai. Noach comes along and he adds a seventh mitzvah, which was what? Eiver Menachai, you're not allowed to eat any limb from a live animal. Then says the Rambam, Nintzu Sheva Mitzvahs. Now we have this conglomerate, now we have a group of seven mitzvahs, which beforehand we only had six. Noah comes along and makes it seven. V'chein haya davar b'chol ha'olam. This was the practice in the world. Everybody tried to keep to these Sheva Mitzvahs b'nei Adam HaRishon b'nei Noach. And then, all of a sudden, comes along Avram Avinu. Ba Avram Avinu v'nitztava yeser al elu b'mila. The mitzvah that was given to Avram Avinu was the mitzvah of Bris Mila. Then, says the Rambam, the Torah went through another phase of evolving. V'hu hispalo shachris. Avram Avinu also was the first one to daven shachris, and then Yitzchak, Hifrish, Meiser. What was Yitzchak's contribution to the world? Yitzchak, says the Rambam, was the first one to give Meiser. Well, doesn't seem that way. The way Tosus understands our pasuk, Aser Aseron Ulach, is that Yaakov Avinu was the first one. So the Rambam disagrees. The Rambam says, no, Yaakov didn't make this up. Yaakov's father, Yitzchak Avinu, already had this idea before him, and that was his contribution to the world, and Yitzchak, as we know, also added the Tefillah of Mincha. So that's the opinion of the Rambam, which is in distinction to the opinion of the Tosus. However, there is yet a third opinion. The Ravid, who very often comments on the Rambam in the Pirush, in his Yada Chazaka, the Ravid says, what are you talking about, Rambam? I don't think you're right, and I don't think Tosus is right. I don't think Yaakov Avinu is the one who did it. I don't think Yitzchak Avinu is the one who did it. In fact, Avram Avinu is the one who did it. Avram Avinu says that he gives his Meiser to Malkitzedek Melech Shalem, Vuhu Kohen Lekel Elyon. Malkitzedek was considered in some way to be a Kohen. Therefore, we have a three-way machlokas here, the Ravid, the Rambam, and the Tosus. Who was the first person to institute this idea of Meiser Ksafim? One says it was Avram Avinu, one says it was Yitzchak, one says it was Yaakov. Now, this is all very nice. However, we know the Rambam writes in the Pirush HaMishnayis to Maseches Chulin. Rambam tells a very, very famous line, and there's a lot of discussion about this, whether the Rambam is correct or not, but let's assume right now that he's correct in this statement, that the reason that we perform the mitzvahs is not because the avos perform the mitzvahs. Let's say, we all know that the mitzvah of Givud Hanasha was given to Yaakov Avinu. The reason nowadays we don't eat the Givud Hanasha, says the Rambam, is not because Yaakov Avinu didn't eat the Givud Hanasha. Rather, it's because later on when the Torah was given, God once again told us, don't eat the Givud Hanasha. So it's true, Yaakov Avinu was the first person to be instructed not to eat the Givud Hanasha, but that's not the reason why we do it. Again, the Rambam says, the reason why we make the mitzvah of Bris Milah nowadays is not because Avram Avinu did the mitzvah of Bris Milah. That's not why we perform it. Rather, it's because, once again, we're told in Parshas Tazria, once the Torah was given, we're told again that this is what you should do. So the Rambam tells us, just because you find things in the lifetime of the various avos, that's not the reason that you should lead your life in that way. Obviously, the Musar ideas that we find, all the drushas that we give, obviously we're supposed to follow in their footsteps. But the mitzvahs per se, says the Rambam, we don't learn from Avram, from Yitzchak, or from Yaakov. We learn them all from Har Sinai. What Moshe Rabbeinu was given at Har Sinai, that is what dictates the way we're supposed to lead our lives. So it's very nice that we have a discussion here, whether it's Avram, Yitzchak, or Yaakov, who was the one who instituted Meiser, but what's the real fundamental makor? Where do we know this from in the Torah itself? If we have to find a real source in the Torah, so how do we know it? So there's a very interesting Gemara in Tainus Daf Tesamad Aleph. The Gemara tells us, let's say you take, for example, for those who are young mothers or young women are running out in the morning, so you take, let's say, nowadays, what time are you allowed to start davening shacharis? You can't start davening before 6 o'clock in the morning. But you have to get your kids off to school at 7:30. So I don't have time. I have to make breakfast, lunches, I have to get them ready, I have to get them dressed and everything. I have to shower. I have a lot of things to do in the morning. When am I going to daven shacharis? And then I'm running out to work right afterward. Or to the shir. So what do I do? So you say you wake up at 6 o'clock in the morning, wake up a little bit early and go and daven. That's a big mesiras nefesh. I was up till 1 o'clock in the morning the night before trying to get the household together. Now you're going to tell me I have to wake up 6 o'clock in the morning, but you know what? For God, I do it anyway. Am I allowed to go after my shacharis and say, you know what, God? Do you see what I just did for you? Do you see what I just did? I woke up at 6 o'clock in the morning. I got 5 hours of sleep just because I wanted to daven a Shemona Esrei. And because of what I just did for you, I expect that you're going to do something nice back for me. I expect that I'm going to go to work today. I'm going to be extremely, highly successful. And if I don't, I'm not getting up tomorrow morning. That would be ludicrous for us to talk in such a way to God. Yet, says the Gemara in Tainus on Daf Tes, when it comes to the mitzvah of tzedakah, we have every right to do that. Says the Pasuk, Uvichanuni gna bazos. It's a Pasuk in Sefer Malachi. God says, test me, try me out. Try me out. You give tzedakah, I promise you, you'll get rich. Aser b'shvil shatis asher. God gives us a promise, you should give Meiser, because that's the way to get rich. That's the way that you'll be successful in life. And God says, "Bichanuni nabazos, test me out on it. You think it's not going to work? Try me. Give your tzedakah, make a deal with God, and if it doesn't work, stop giving the tzedakah. I promise you, says God, it will work. This is the one case where we find, contrary to every other mitzvah in the Torah, that you have a right to challenge God. And you have a right to tell him, "Bichanuni nabazos, go and test him out. See if it works. And if it doesn't work, forget it. There's something wrong. This is what God himself says, Bichanuni Nabazos. When it comes to the mitzvah of tzedakah, we have every right to make such a deal and to expect that God is going to give us back because of the deal that we give him. So over there, that's where the Gemara is discussing there about the mitzvah of tzedakah and about the fact that we have every right to test God when it comes to this mitzvah. Tosis points out on the daf there, let's look at number Beis on the source sheet. We have a pasuk that says, Aser to Aser is called Tevua Zarecha. Pasuk says you have to give Meiser from all of the grain, from all of the produce that grows in your land. As the Tosis quotes a Sifri, Ein li ela zarecha shechai b'meiser. This pasuk only indicates that I have to give meiser from that which grows from the ground, from my produce, from all the grain. Ribis uprakmatia v'chol shah revachaminayin. Ask Tosis, how do you know that every investment, every business transaction, every acquisition that I make, how do I know that I have to give meiser from that as well? The pasuk only says, aser ta aser is kol tuvua zarecha. You have to give meiser from that which grows from the ground. So Tosis quotes a Sifri, how do you know that you have to give from every acquisition, from every investment that you make, how do you know you're supposed to give Meiser as well? Here the Pasuk says, Talmud Lomar Eskol. Why does it say, Aser to Aser, Eskol to Vuaz Arecha? Every single bit of the grain that grows from your ground, you have to give Meiser from. Tosis understands that to mean that it's coming to include something more than just the grain from the ground. And what does it include? It includes every business transaction, every investment, every bit of money that you make, every acquisition that you acquire in your life, you are supposed to give Meiser from that. If you stop there, it sounds like a very serious thing to do. And Tosis actually assumes that this is a mitzvah midaraisa, this is the way the Menchas Chinuch understands, it's a mitzvah midaraisa to go ahead and give Meiser from all of the money that you acquire, that you accumulate in your life. Many disagree, and many say no, it's not only not a mitzvah, it's not a mitzvah d'araisa, it is only a mitzvah midrabanan. Okay, so you'll say, what difference? What's the difference? Neiros Chanukah, is a mitzvah d'araisa or d'rabanan? D'rabanan. Is anyone going to say, well, it's only rabbinical in action, I don't have to do it? Of course not. We all light Neiros Chanukah. So what's the difference if it's d'araisa, if it's d'rabanan? Well, that doesn't make such a difference. However, the overwhelming majority of the poskim assume, both Sephardi and Ashkenazi, the overwhelming majority, the assumption is that not only is the mitzvah Meiser Ksafim not a dinda araisa, not only is it not a dinda rabbanan, most assume that it is only a minhag. It is not a dinda araisa, it is not a dinda rabbanan, it is only a minhag, which means this was the practice, this is what they used to do, it's not biblical, it's not rabbinic, it's rather, it's just, this was the conventional practice in the world, and this is what everybody does. So, in fact, Rav Moshe Feinstein writes, if you look at number Gimel, Rav Moshe is of this opinion as well, and many, many other Achronim, the Chafetz Chaim writes like this, that this is only a minhag ba'alma, this is only the practice, this is the conventional, this is the custom, but it is not an actual din. Rav Moshe actually writes, if you look at number Gimel, Elohu mehamailos, look at the end of the paragraph, Elohu mehamailos hagadolos. This is one of the very elevated, lofty kind of ideals that we're supposed to look toward. Sherotzim chachamim shekol adam yaseh. The Chachamim want that we should accustom ourselves to doing such a thing. Ve'eno avaryan kisheino osazu. Says Rav Moshe Feinstein, we wouldn't call you, let's say somebody decides to be Mechal Shabbos. We would call you a bum, shegetz, right? What are you doing? You're Mechal Shabbos. We call you all sorts of names. I mean, we wouldn't, but we would brand you as such. However, says Rav Moshe, if you have somebody who deliberately does not give Meiser Ksafim, deliberately does not give money to tzedakah, besides for the bare minimum, says Rav Moshe, we wouldn't call you any names. Why? Because really, it's not a real mitzvah, it's only a minhag ba'alma. Now, we have three opinions here, whether it's d'araisa, whether it's d'rabanan, or whether it's a minhag. And again, as we said, most opinions assume it's only a minhag. And because I just want to digress for a few minutes on a point which I feel is a very important point. And it comes up in many different areas. I speak about it a lot because to me it's a very important one. Because we assume that the mitzvah of Meiser Ksafim is only a minhag ba'alma, and it's not the araisa and it's not the rabbanan, therefore we have to prioritize when we have other financial obligations that are actually obligations. For example, if somebody is going to default on a loan because they're busy paying off some yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael, because they're busy giving tzedakah here and giving to Shaarei Tzedek and giving Israel bonds and giving all these wonderful things, well, that's all very nice, but you have an obligation to take care of what you are obligated to take care of before you go ahead and be Mr. Tzaddik or Mrs. Tzaddik and give all of your money to tzedakah. You have to take care of your obligations first. Now, Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach talks about this in the Sefer Halicha Shlomo. And he writes in general that we have to be very careful it's very nice to take upon yourself stringencies and chumras, and you want to be more exalted, more virtuous, you want to be more honorable person, it's wonderful, it's all nice. But you always have to take into account, at whose expense are you taking on that stringency? Said Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, he said he cringed. He would cringe when he walked in the streets of Yerushalayim, and he would see how a couple was walking on Shabbos afternoon, and the husband decided he wanted to take a chumra upon himself and not carry in the Erev. And because of that, as a byproduct, his wife would be sitting there with 10 kids jumping all over her and with stuff coming out of the stroller, and she has to keep stopping and picking everything up, and she's going crazy. All because her husband wants to be the big tzaddik and the big machmir and not carrying the Erev. Said Rav Shlomo Zalman, what right do you have as a husband to take that upon yourself and to be at an expense of your wife? She has to be the martyr for your chumrah? Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach said he remembers he once saw that there was a father and a son walking down the street. And the father is carrying a big stack of chairs, and the son is walking like this right next to him with his arms crossed. And Rav Shlomo Zalman stops him and he says, your father is an old man, what are you doing? Why is your father carrying the chairs? He says, I would never carry the Erev. And he says, and you would violate the mitzvah of Kibud Av V'Em? Because you don't want to carry the Erev? We have to put everything in perspective. Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach went so far as to say, and this is amazing, he went so far as to say, there are those, if you look in the Sefer Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa, it's a classic Sefer on Hilchos Shabbos. So in the Sefer Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa, he writes the following. He says that there are those who decided to come up with a new stringency, a new chumrah. And what is that? Well, Bishul on Shabbos is very important, and it's something maybe we'll talk about some other time. You have to be very careful not to cook on Shabbos. Okay, very careful. We're all trying to be careful. So the Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa said there were some who came up with the following chumrah. What's the chumrah? That what's going to be, I'm going to clean off my plates, and now there's going to be a little droplet of water left on the plate. Now I'm going to put the plate on the table. Someone's going to serve me the chalon. The chalon's going to be burning hot, and it's going to go and cook the little drop of water that's on my plate. Nebuch! I'm going to violate the Isra of Bishul on Shabbos. Okay? It's a very, 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 very far chashash that maybe a drop of water is going to get cooked from the chalon that's on your plate. It's very far. However, Shlomo Zalman Auerbach says, there were those who wanted to take upon themselves such a chumr. Listen to the sensitivity of Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, a gadol b'Yisrael. This is the way they think. He said, a person who wants to take that chumr upon himself or herself, very nice, do whatever you want. But you cannot do it while you have young children in the house. Why not? If I want to clean off my plate, I want to make sure there's no droplets of water, what does it make a difference to my kids? I'm not asking anyone else to do it. Listen to this. Because what's going to happen? My kids are going to see that this is what I do. Then they're going to have a play date next Shabbos by someone else's house, and they're going to see that the parents don't do that. They don't understand the difference between a chumrah and a din and a darais and a darabanan. They don't understand the nuance. So all they think is they see the way their parents keep Shabbos, and they're going to say, well, anyone who doesn't do like my parents is a mechal Shabbos. Said Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, you have a right to make your kids think about somebody else that they're a mechal Shabbos? Just because you want to take a chumrah upon yourself, and now your kids are going to think negatively about somebody else in your neighborhood? You have no right to do that while your children are young. When everyone's out of the house and you want to take upon your own stringencies, do whatever you want. But to do it on the expense of somebody else? He goes that far as to suggest you're not even allowed to do it in such a case like that. There's an incredible insight that I saw. If you look in Parshas Lech Lecha, it's very interesting. In the beginning of Parshas Lech Lecha, we have a story of Avraham Avinu. We have two pretty much identical stories, but the ends are very different. In the beginning of the parsha, we have Avraham Avinu goes down to Mitzrayim by Hira Ba'aretz. There's a famine. Avraham Avinu takes himself down to Mitzrayim and he meets up with Paro and something happens there. And then Paro is trying to get him out of town because Paro realizes it's not going to be good if I keep making Avraham Avinu suffer, and he throws him out of town. And then La Avram Heitiv Ba'avura, and because Paro started up with Sarah, Paro felt that he had to make good to Avraham Avinu, so he gives him Heitiv Ba'avura, he gives him all sorts of wonderful things. Avraham Avinu takes all of this wealth from Paro. You look a few psukim later, at the very end of the parsha, we have the story of Avraham Avinu is fighting with different kings, and all of a sudden Melech Sodom has an encounter with Avraham Avinu. And the Mefarshim point out that over here the reaction is very different. Melech Sodom wants to give Avraham Avinu all sorts of goods, and he wants to make him rich. And Avraham Avinu says, absolutely not. Im michut v'ad tzruchnal, I wouldn't even take a shoelace, a pencil, a pen, a rubber band, I wouldn't take a thing from you. Why? Because I don't want anyone to say that you're the one who made me rich. It was God. It wasn't you. So all the Mefarshim ask, I don't understand. In the beginning of the parsha, Avraham Avinu has no problem taking from Paro. All of a sudden, at the end of the parsha, Avraham Avinu says, no, I would never take from Avimelech Melech Sodom. Why not? What's the difference? So this is discussed in various commentaries on Chumash. And I saw a beautiful insight from the Talon Rebbe from Yerushalayim, where he suggests the following. If you look carefully in the Psukim, Avraham Avinu, after he travels to Mitzrayim and now he's on his way back, it says, Vayelech Lemasa Av. What does that mean? And he goes on his travels. Rashi understands there's something more going on here. What do you mean he went on his travels? Obviously, he went back home, so it means he went on his travels. Rashi says what it means is he stayed in the same hotels on the way back that he stayed on the way down. Why? Rashi says because he borrowed money on his way down. He didn't have enough money. Para hakafosav, Rashi says. He had to pay back all of the creditors, all the people that he borrowed money from. He had to pay them back on the way home because he borrowed money on the way down. Says the Talon Rebbe, if you are in debt, and somebody comes along and offers you money that you can absolve yourself of all of your debt and pay all of the people back who lent you money, you have no right to say, I don't want to accept it because I'm such a tzaddik. You owe people money. If somebody's willing to give it to you, you better take it. It's not your choice to say no. You have no right to say no in such a case. And therefore, at that time, when Avraham Avinu still owed money to all the hotels that he stayed in, of course, when he was offered money by Paro, he had to take the money because he knew that he was owing money to other people in the world. However, at the very end of the Parsha, when Avraham Avinu is already a wealthy man on his own, and he doesn't owe other people money, and everything's fine, so then he says, okay, I'll take a chumra upon myself. I don't need your money, Avimelech, Melech Sodom. I could do without it. I don't want anyone to say that you were the one who made me rich. Chumras are only allowed to be taken upon ourselves when it's not going to be at the expense of other people. I saw an incredible insight. When you look at the lifetime in just a couple of parshios, you look at the lifetime of Moshe Rabbeinu in the beginning of Sefer Shemos, Parsha Shemos. So it says that by Yetze Elecha, Moshe Rabbeinu goes out to his brothers, even though he was raised in the palace of Paro, goes out to his brothers, Vayar b'sivlosam. Says the Medrash, what does it mean? And he sees that they're suffering. Anybody with two eyes can see that the Jewish people are suffering. It says, no. He saw Leos Meitzer Aleim. He put himself in their shoes and he understood. He empathized with them. He understood that even though he wasn't being tortured in the palace of Paro, he put himself in the situation, and so much so, he even put his life on the line. He sees two people fighting and he risks his own life. He has to run away and find his own wife somewhere else. You see how much Moshe Rabbeinu is willing to get involved for the suffering of the Jewish people. Yet, Moshe Rabbeinu now, God comes to him by the Sinai and he says, it's time for you to go be the savior of the Jewish people. Moshe Rabbeinu says no. And the Medrash tells us not only did Moshe Rabbeinu say no, he declines for 7 days straight. God is sitting there and fighting with him that he should go and do it. And they're fighting back and forth. And he's abstaining. And God says, no, you better go. I want you to save the Jewish people. And he says, absolutely not. And the Medrash asks, what was wrong with Moshe Rabbeinu? All of a sudden he doesn't want to get involved? Here he is his whole life and he cares. Vayar b'sivlosam. He's empathizing with them. He's feeling all of their pain. He's willing to put his life on the line. All of a sudden God wants him to be Moshe on Shal Yisrael. God wants him, we'll get back to Ma'aser Kesefim. God wants him to be the savior of the Jewish people and he can't put himself up to the task? What's going on here? Explains the Medrash. You shouldn't think that Moshe Rabbeinu was nervous about doing it. You shouldn't think he didn't want to get involved, but rather, Moshe Rabbeinu knew that he had an older brother by the name of Aaron HaKohen. And what was going on all these years while Moshe Rabbeinu was away? Aaron was the leader of the Jewish people. So, how's Aaron going to feel if I'm going to take away the spotlight from him? So how can I go ahead and save the Jewish people if Aaron HaKohen is really the one who's the leader right now? And I'm the younger brother. How can I take it away from him? Very nice, but does that make any sense? You have millions and millions of Jews living in Mitzrayim who are waiting for you to save them. And because you have a brother named Aaron HaKohen who might feel a little bit bad that his younger brother, I would be pretty proud if my younger brother outdid me. I don't have any. But so because of that, he's willing to give up on this whole mission. Does that make sense? And the Bali Musar explained, absolutely yes. God will find another way to save the Jewish people. But if my being a hero, if my being the emancipator of the Jewish people is going to cause somebody else to feel even a little bit slighted, I don't need it. I don't want it. I don't need it. I'm not interested. I'll decline. I'll fight with God. I'm not interested because I'm stepping on someone else's toes. That's the same thing with every chumrah that we take upon ourselves. And this is the sensitivity that every leader of the Jewish people has had throughout the generations, that we have no right to take chumras upon ourselves when somebody else is going to be the karban for what we just did. When somebody else is going to suffer or even going to be slightly hurt or their lives are going to be made slightly more difficult, we don't have a right to take that upon ourselves. It comes up often in Hilchas Nida and Taras HaMishpacha as well. You have one couple, you have a couple, and one spouse decides they want to take upon themselves some chumrah. Well, it's very nice, but what's that going to do for the other spouse? Are they really on board, or are you just throwing it down their throat? You have to think about it. It's not so simple. And therefore, when it comes to Maaser Kesafim as well, the Achronim point out, take for example, my father always tells young couples, you have young couples nowadays who are under the assumption that their parents are going to take care of them. I don't know if that's the working assumption here, but it's the assumption in many places. Parents are going to take care of them the first couple of years. So now what happens? Couple gets married, the parents say, okay, we'll take care of you the first year, or we'll take care of you until you get out of college, or until you get out of graduate school, whatever it is. Now the kids are going to start giving Maaser Kesafim. Well, if you give Maaser Kesafim, your parents are going to have to give you more money. You're on loan right now. You don't have a right to take upon yourself a chumrah of giving Maaser Kesafim when somebody else is supporting you. You're young and you're being supported by others, and now you're going to give away the money to someone else and ask your parents to give you more money? You don't have a right to take upon a chumrah if right now you are borrowing money from someone else. So this is something that we need to think about as well when we talk about the din of Maaser Kesafim. The Chafetz Chaim writes in a Sefer Avas Chesed that really the original institution of Maaser Kesafim was the custom came about because the Chachamim wanted that people should help support Talmidei Chachamim and Lomdei HaTorah. That's what the Chafetz Chaim writes. So when we're trying to prioritize where our Maaser Kesafim should go, you should always keep that in mind. We'll talk about different factors as well, but you should always keep in mind the original takana was, the original institution of Maaser Kesafim was, really to support Lomdei HaTorah. That was really what it was for. So now let's get into an interesting discussion. You look at number Daled, the Gemara says, just before we look at the Gemara, you take for example, let's say you have someone gets a letter from the federal government. You paid your taxes, we got it, but you were short $5,000. We sent you a bill that you owed an extra few thousand dollars and the check that you wrote out was not sufficient. Okay. Next day I get a letter from the state. You paid your taxes, but by the way, you were short $5,000. Can I send one check in and say, okay, take care of this. Here's a $5,000 check. This is for the state and the federal. Obviously not. Correct? Because you owe $5,000 to the state and $5,000 to the federal government. You can't take money that was already allocated for the federal government and give it now for the state. That's not going to work. Everyone understands that. Well, the same works in halacha, says the Gemara. Number Dalet. Gemara in Chagiga, Dav Zayin Amud Beis. Davar Shebechova Eino Ba Ela Menachulin. Let's say, for example, I have an obligation when I go to the Beis HaMikdash on Sukkis, on Rosh Hashanah, I'm sorry, on Pesach Shavuot Sukkis, I have an obligation to bring karbanos with me. So it costs me $500 to buy a cow. Okay? What $500 can I spend on that cow? Can I take $500 from my tzedakah account and use it for my cow to go to the Beis HaMikdash and offer a karban? No. Why? Because that $500 is already designated for something else. That's like taking money, $5,000 for the federal government and now telling the state government to go talk to the federal government. Obviously it doesn't work. So too over here. When I have an obligation, that is an obligation that's regardless. It's an obligation that I have to do. I can't take money from tzedakah to pay for my obligation. Because that's not a tzedakah, that's a necessity that I have. So that's what the Gemara says. And there are many interesting discussions in the Achronim based on this. Let's say you take, for example, we have a mitzvah on Purim, matanos la'avyonim. You have to give money to the poor. Where does the matanos la'avyonim have to come from? If I have a special account in a bank account, that's my tzedakah account only, can I take money from my tzedakah account and try and fulfill my mitzvah of matanos la'avyonim? Many achronim say no. Why? Because you have a new obligation now. On top of your obligation, on top of the money you set aside for tzedakah, now you have a new obligation of matanos la'avyonim. Now again, matanos la'avyonim does not mean giving out thousands of dollars on Purim. Obviously that you're allowed to give from tzedakah. Matanos la'avyonim is the bare minimum, taking care of an ani, taking care of a poor person on Purim, making sure that they have what to eat. That should not be given from your tzedakah account because that is an obligation that you have outside of your tzedakah account. Take for another example. It's a touchy subject, but it comes up all the time. Shul membership. People always ask, can I pay my shul membership, assuming that you pay shul membership, and you should, not here, but wherever you daven. So shul membership, can I pay my shul membership from Maaser Kesafim? Interesting question. The answer is absolutely not. Why? Because you have an obligation. The same way if you go to a gym, you have an obligation to pay membership to the gym, otherwise you cannot use the service. So too, if you daven in a shul, or you take services from the shul, and you use all sorts of things, it doesn't mean you come once a year, once a month, or once a week. Obviously, that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about somebody who uses the services continuously. Then the understanding is you're going to pay for membership. If that's the case, that's an obligation that you have. You don't have a right to fulfill your obligation with money that was already allocated for something else. That's what the Pnei Yeshua writes in his tshuva. There's an interesting shaila that was asked after the Holocaust, an unfortunate one, but interesting. There was somebody who sent in a shaila to the Minchas Yitzchak, and there were others who discussed it as well, but he's the one who wrote a nice tshuva about it, so he suggested, he was the Dayan in Yerushalayim after the war. So he suggested the following story. There was somebody who was present when, Rachman al-Itzlan, when his mother was murdered in Auschwitz or wherever it was, and he knew exactly what date it was. So he knew that he had to keep yahrzeit, he had to observe yahrzeit for his mother on Rosh Chodesh Elul. Let's say that's the day it was. So what does he do for a yahrzeit? He makes, brings cakes and cookies, and he makes a whole big fancy meal, and he says Kaddish, and he dances for the Yamud. Wonderful. After the war was over, he finds out that his father also perished in the Holocaust, but he didn't know when that happened. So he has to observe yahrzeit for his father, but he doesn't know when to do it. Because how's he going to pick arbitrarily any day? So some say, okay, arbitrarily we should pick Yom Kippur. Some say arbitrarily we should pick Tisha B'Av, whatever. Everyone has their own ideas. This man says, I have a great idea. I'm observing yahrzeit anyway. I'm davening for the Yamud on Rosh Chodesh Elul because I know that's when my mother passed away. Why don't I now observe yahrzeit for my father and mother on the same day? So you're a rotten son for thinking like that. You may as well give 2 days of your life for your parents. Maybe they deserve it. But this was the shaila that he wanted to know. Let's say he doesn't like to daven for the Yamud. He has to daven for the Yamud one time a year. So why doesn't he make sure that he's going to observe the yahrzeit for his mother and his father on one day? Is he allowed to do that? So the Minchas Yitzchak discusses, and he says maybe it's connected to this question. If you have an obligation to observe one day of yahrzeit for your mother, you can now tack on a new obligation that you have. You have a chiyuv kibud avayim on your mother to respect her. You have a separate chiyuv kibud avayim to respect your father. If they happen to pass away on the same day, okay, what can you do? But if not, perhaps you don't have a right to observe both of them on the same day, because that's an obligation that I already have, regardless of my father. So that's an interesting... it's an interesting discussion. Then it went on to a further discussion as, you know, sometimes you have people who are paid to say Kaddish for someone for a whole year. I don't know why you have people who all over the world who pay someone else to say Kaddish instead of them. So you have, the Shaila was asked, what if you have somebody who's a paid Kaddish sayer, I guess, and now all of a sudden his father or mother passes away, so now he has to say Kaddish for his parents, but he's already hired to say Kaddish for someone else. So what does he do? Does he have to go to two minyanim every day to make sure to say Kaddish once for this person, once for that person, or could one Kaddish count for everybody? All sorts of interesting questions. How does this relate to the mitzvah of Maaser Kesafim? So you come to our question here. The Rama writes in number Vav. Says the Rama, Ein lasos mi Maaser shelo dvar mitzvah. Says the Rama, really, strictly speaking, if you are of the means to give Maaser Kesafim, you shouldn't spend Maaser Kesafim on buying yourself a sukkah, on buying a Hanukkah menorah, on buying Neir Shabbos. Why not? Because that's an obligation that you have regardless of your tzedakah. You have to buy a sukkah anyway for sukkahs. You have to buy a menorah anyway for Hanukkah. So you shouldn't go ahead and use the funds that are in your Maaser account to try and now pay, to try and pay now for the mitzvahs that you have to perform. That's what the Rama says. There are some who disagree, but this is what the Rama says. However, you take, for example, let's say a sukkah of a person of my means, let's say, a sukkah should cost $1,000. I have no idea. I'm just suggesting. If I want to have a hider mitzvah of sukkah, it will cost me $5,000 or $6,000. So what about the difference between a $1,000 sukkah and a $6,000 sukkah? I don't have an obligation to buy a $6,000 sukkah. My obligation is to buy a $1,000 sukkah. My mitzvah will be fine. If I want to enhance my mitzvah, make it nicer, make it more enjoyable, that will cost me $6,000. So many achronim assume that the difference between a $1,000 sukkah and a $6,000 sukkah, which in higher mathematics is $5,000, I would be allowed to use miser money to pay that difference. Why? Because again, that's not an obligation that I have to spend $6,000 on a sukkah. And similarly, if you want to buy a Hanukkah menorah, and instead of buying the simple one from the store with the little wax candles, which is fine for the mitzvah, you decide that you want to buy a big fancy silver menorah, and it's going to cost you $10,000. Well, can you pay the difference between 25 cents and $10,000 from Meiser money? Say the Achronim, yes. Why? Because you're not obligated to buy the silver menorah in the store. The reason you're buying it, assuming you're not buying it for yourself and for your own grandizement and to show off to everybody, but you're really doing it because you want to beautify the mitzvah, then perhaps you would be allowed to pay the difference from the Meiser money. Let's say you take another example. We have children who very often want a set of lulav and esrog. We're not talking about 2-3-year-olds where you buy, you know, some plastic or whatever. We're talking about a 10-year-old who really wants his own set of lulav and esrog. Or when the child is 12 years old, we buy them a pair of tefillin, or all sorts of chinuch opportunities. So are you allowed to use Meiser money for that? And the answer is no. Why? Because the same way you have an obligation to perform your own mitzvahs and to pay for them, so too you have an obligation to be mechanech your children. And part of chinuch means you're going to buy them a menorah, part of chinuch means you're going to buy them a lulav and esrog, and you're going to do all sorts of things that help them facilitate themselves to get used to performing mitzvahs. And therefore we would assume the same way you're not supposed to use your own money, your own mitzvah money from Meiser Kesefim, so too you shouldn't spend it on your children's mitzvahs either. We come to a very interesting discussion, which is very, very surprising actually, where the Gemara says in Ksubas and Daf Nun, that's number Zion on the source sheet, the Gemara tells us the following. Says the Gemara, quoting a pasuk, there is somebody who's called Oset Tzedakos Bechal Eis. There is somebody who we give the title of, you are an incredible person. You know why? Because you are Oset Tzedakos Bechal Eis. You give tzedakah at every moment of your life. Who is that? Who are we describing? You have somebody who gives a check here, a check there. I'm not giving tzedakah every second of my life. What does that mean? Unless I built a hospital, and now because of the contribution that I made, every second of my life is now paying off because somebody's using my service. Somebody's using what I gave. But what does it mean, Oset Tzedakos Bechal Eis? For most of us, what does that mean? We can't afford to build a hospital. So who is this person that's Oset Tzedakos Bechal Eis? Says the Gemara, you know who it is? This is the very kind person. Ze hazan es banav kishehem ketanu. This is the very kind individual with benevolence who's willing to support their children while they're young. Does that bother anybody? I wouldn't call that a tzedakah. I would say that's my obligation. When I signed up as a parent and I had children, part of my obligation is that I'm going to take care of them. So what does it mean you're considered a big tzaddik, Mr. and Mrs. Tzedakah men, because you are now supporting your young children that you brought into the world? Isn't that your obligation? So what exactly does the Gemara mean? Rashi explains over there, you look at Rashi, no less surprising. Tahainu, says Rashi, what are we talking about? Who is the tzedakah couple? The ones who support their children when they're already old enough to take care of themselves, but you still choose to take care of them. For example, says Rashi, be yoser al shesh, when they're more than 6 years old. And now, the children, the assumption is in the days of Rashi, in the days of the Gemara, that till 6 years old, you have to have some rachmanis on them. You know, you have to nurture them, you have to take care of them. After 6, you're on your own. Go get a job. And therefore, an obligation, yes, it's true, when I signed up as a parent, I agreed that I'm going to support my child, but there has to be a boundary. How much do I have to support them? Says Rashi, in our days, we were already responsible at 6 years old. So past 6, everybody went out and got their own job. Parents didn't have an obligation. It would make life pretty easy nowadays. But that's the way Rashi understands. And that's what the Rambam paskins as well. That until 6 years old, I have an obligation to support my children. After 6, I no longer have that obligation. Says R. Moshe Feinstein. This is ridiculous to assume that that should be the obligation nowadays. Nowadays, the norms have changed. And our children are not even responsible at 50 years old. So certainly they're not responsible at 6 years old. So what does it mean when we have children who are still living off of us at 20 years old? I would imagine the general assumption is we're going to support our kids till they are 23, 24, something like that, till they get married, till they move out of the house, something of that nature. So our obligation when we had children is, now that we're signing up to have kids and God is kind enough to give us those children, our obligation to our kids is until they are whatever the communal norm is, says R. Moshe Feinstein. 21 years old, 22, till they get married, till they finish college, whatever it is, but that's our obligation as parents. Past that point, we no longer have an obligation, says the Gemara. If you choose to support your children and help them past that point of what's considered a normal communal obligation, The Gemara says you are called an Ose Tzedakos B'chol Eis. You are called somebody who's performing the mitzvah of tzedakah at all times, which is something we don't think about. You know, we're always so quick to send checks to this organization, which is far away, and to that one, which is far away. What about the fact that we have family members who can use our own help? The Shulchan Aruch paskins, when you're trying to prioritize and giving tzedakah, Aniyei Ircha Kodmin, it means the poor people of your own city come first. What does it mean, of your city? How far does my city extend? So the Gemara says, the understanding is, what's closest to your heart. Doesn't mean Ircha Mamish, my father likes to say. Let's say I went to a certain seminary in Eretz Yisrael, and now I have an affinity for that school. That's, even though it's 6,000 miles away, that's called Aniyei Ircha, to me. That's considered part of my life. That's a very important part of my life. And therefore, when I'm prioritizing in my tzedakah, I'm allowed to give money there instead of giving money somewhere else, which is a local cause. Obviously, I should support my local causes as well. But in prioritizing, Aniyei Ircha come first. And here the Gemara says, Aniyei Ircha doesn't only mean somebody who is an institution, someone is an organization, it even means our own children. Past the time when we no longer expect, the community doesn't expect any longer for us to be supporting our kids, if you choose to support your children at that point, it makes a big nafkamina. Let's say you have parents who take care of their kids after they get married. Are you allowed to use miser money to help support your children after they get married? The answer is yes. Why? Because the understanding is that our obligation ends, our community obligation ends, let's say when the kids get married. It's not an obligation that I have to support them after they get married. They should be supporting themselves. If you want to be kind enough and support them at that point, so since you're no longer within your obligation now, you are allowed to go ahead and use possibly the Maaser Kesafim. There is an interesting question that's asked, and people ask this all the time. What happens when you have an organization that puts on a Chinese auction? And I want to buy tickets, and I want to win raffles, and I want to win all sorts of things. Am I allowed to use Maaser money in order to purchase raffle tickets for a Chinese auction? Well, the Shaila was asked in the next phase because there was somebody who won an apartment, and now an apartment in Israel, and now the tzedakah organization said, well, hey, we heard that you used Maaser Kesafim to buy the ticket, now it belongs to us. Interesting question. Think about this. Okay, was that too fast? I bought a raffle ticket. Now I want an apartment in Israel. And now the institution finds out that the check that I sent them for the raffle tickets was from my Maaser money. Which means I gave my tzedakah money to the institution, they put tickets into the box for me, and now I happen to win. So the institution called me up and said, you don't deserve the apartment because the apartment belongs back to us. Is that reasonable or not? The answer is it's absolutely unreasonable. Why? Because I gave my money regardless of the Chinese auction. That was just an incentive. The same way if, let's say, I give Maaser money and I lose the auction, can I call them back and say I want my money back? Of course not. That would never fly. So the same would go in the other direction. They don't have a right to tell me when I happen to win one in a million. They don't have a right to tell me that now the prize that I won belongs to them. Again, so you have a right to spend Maaser money on that. Why? Because we assume that really the money that you're giving is not connected to the Chinese auction. The money you're giving is going for the cause. Chinese auction is an extra incentive to get people to give the money. And even if you win, the items that you win belong to you and not to them. Let's just close with the most common shaila that is asked when it comes to the issue of Maaser Kesafim, and that is with yeshiva day school tuition. This is a major problem. Yeshiva day school tuition is a major problem, not Maaser Kesafim. This is the biggest problem in our community for young families, because if you have a bunch of kids in school, you can be paying $70,000, $80,000 in tuition easily to send your kids to school. And how is anyone supposed to do that? And this is a major problem. So you go on all sorts of tuition reductions, and you have all sorts of chesed that the school does for you, and it's great, and it's wonderful, but you're still left with a $50,000 bill. So now what? Am I allowed to use my Maaser money to pay off the school for the tuition that I owe them? So what's the crux of the issue? The crux of the issue is, what is my obligation to educate my children? Again, if I have an obligation when I sign up to have kids, when I get married, I have an obligation to take care of my spouse. So that's an obligation. I can't use tzedakah money for that. If when I have children, my obligation is that I have to feed them, and I have to give them clothing, and I have to take care of them, make sure there's air conditioning and heating in the house, I can't use Maaser money for that, because that's an obligation that I have. And I can't use Maaser money to fulfill an obligation that's outside of my tzedakah fund. However, what is my obligation when we talk about educating my children? How far does my obligation go? As a parent, what does the Torah understand is my obligation as a parent? So Rav Asher Weiss wrote a tshuva about this. I didn't bring the whole thing here, I just put certain paragraphs from the tshuva, and it's a very important one. Let's look as follows. Bamesh Hashah L'dayti. Somebody asked the following question. Hayim Mutter L'shalim Schar Limud Mimos Maaser. This is on the bottom of the page, number Ches. Somebody asked, are they allowed to give schar limud? Are they allowed to pay tuition from the Moles Meiser, from the Meiser money? Why? Ki Parnasasa de Chuka. Now here, I take issue with him a little, not in a bad way, but Parnasasa de Chuka, he says, because I'm strapped for money. In America, you don't have to be strapped for money not to be able to afford tuition. You can have a very nice job, and you still can't afford tuition because you have a bunch of kids in school, and it's sucking out all of the money that you make. So, whatever it is, it's not an issue of being rich or poor. It's an issue of, I simply cannot afford it, even if I am wealthy, even if I have a nice job, and I have an income. It's still not so easy to pay tuition. So that's the question. So in America, we have tremendous, tremendous tuition bills, and that's the question that was posed. So he writes as follows. He says you can break this down into a couple of different components. Ratios, number one. Chayiv adam lilmod banav b'schar. As a parent, the same way I have an obligation to feed my children, to buy them clothing, to provide for them and make sure they're healthy, I also have an obligation to hire somebody to teach them. Kimavur b'shulchan aruch yaradeya. This is the obligation of every parent to educate their children. The question is, how far? So let's see. Umemela, and therefore, because this is the working assumption that I as a parent have an obligation, an absolute obligation to educate my children, therefore, ein l'shalem schar halimud mikesef meiser, therefore I am not allowed to use meiser money, don't worry, we'll get to the details in a minute. Therefore, I'm not allowed to use meiser money to pay somebody to teach my child because that's my obligation as a parent. However, go to the next paragraph. Va'af l'gabi chinuch habanim, k'var kosev b'shulchan aruch harav. So he says, well, it's true that I have an obligation to teach and to educate my children. However, how far does the obligation go? So he writes from the Shulchan Aruch HaRav, who's the Baal HaTanya, the first Lubavitcher Rebbe. You look in this, this is in the second paragraph. I'm sorry, the third paragraph, the last one on the page. Dirak chelek hatashtum shel schar hamelamed ein litein mikesef meiser. What is my obligation as a parent? My obligation as a parent is to hire someone to teach my child. But nowadays, it's not so simple. Because part of hiring someone to teach my child is also to pay a janitor to clean up the school after my child leaves. It's to pay a security guard to watch my children while they're in school that they shouldn't get hurt. It's to pay a principal to look out for all the kids and make sure everyone's in line. It's to pay all the secretaries to run the office. It's to pay for the mailings. We have to pay for all sorts of things on top of our obligation for just paying the strict salary of the teacher. So therefore, the Shulchan Aruch HaRav assumes that my obligation as a parent really is only just to have a private tutor come to the house, pay them to teach my child. But because nowadays the schools are charging, rightfully so, but they're charging for all the other services, that's not really intrinsically obligatory when I signed up to be a parent. And therefore, he suggests you would be allowed to use Meister money for anything that's outside of the strict salary of a teacher. So take, for example, you have 10, 15 kids in a class, let's say, and the teacher is making $15,000. I hope not, right? But let's say that's the case. So let's just, argument's sake, and somehow they're charging $15,000 of tuition. Okay? So let's say each kid in the class, $1,000 from their tuition money is going toward the salary of the teacher. The other $14,000 of my money is going for all the other needs of the school. So the other $14,000 I would be allowed to pay from my Meiser money. That's what the Shulchan Aruch HaRav writes. Again, because my obligation as a parent is just to educate my child and have someone teach them, my obligation as a parent is not all the other frills and all the extracurricular activities. Take, for example, if my child needs remedial help and I need to hire a tutor to come and teach them in the house because they need extra help. So again, that's not my obligation as a parent to give them extra help. I'm providing them an education. They'll be fine. I just want them to be more than fine. I want them to be top of the class. I want them to be really keeping up with everybody. They could pass the school. They could be okay if they come out without these extra tutors. We nowadays try and give our kids the best opportunities they can have, and therefore we'll hire tutors as well. The tutoring money, many assume you can use Meiser Kseffen for. Why? Because that's above and beyond your obligation as a parent. That's above and beyond your obligation as a parent. Your obligation as a parent is not, even though we all want to do this, but your obligation as a parent is not to provide your kid and make them the best of the best and the greatest and the brightest. That's not your obligation. Your obligation is to make sure they're educated and that they can succeed in life. Yeah?
Can you use Meiser money for real estate taxes if you want the services of a district to better enhance your child's education?
Got to think about it. I'm not sure. not crazy about that. But this, the Stipler already wrote this. The Stipler, who was one of the great Gedolim of the last generation, lived in Bnei Brak. He already said this idea. If you feel that you want to hire extra help in Kriya, extra help in all sorts of things, remedial help that your children might need, says the Stipler, he feels that you can use money from Meiser to try and pay off that bill. I mean, as we know, tutoring is a very expensive undertaking. Or you take, for example, you have somebody who wants to send their kid, let's say, nowadays our understanding is we have to send our girls to seminary after they finish high school. Let's say, that's the working understanding of our community. So it's my obligation as a parent to send my kid to seminary, because that's our working understanding, that's our assumption. However, let's say I want to send my kid to a seminary which costs $5,000 a year, halavai. But instead, meaning I can send them to a very simple seminary, $5,000 a year, and they'll have a great year. I can send them to a seminary which I think they'll do much better in, and they'll excel exceedingly well in, but that's going to cost me $25,000. So what about the difference between 25 and 5? Meaning I could have sent them to seminary, $5,000, but instead I chose to send them to the 25,000 because I think that their opportunities will be greater by going there. So that difference, explains Rav Asher Weiss, also, you can take that money off of Meiser because, again, my obligation as a parent is spend the $5,000. We're not talking about sending them to a youth hostel. We're talking about something which is really in their wavelength, which is something in their horizons. Just you choose to bump it up and send them to a better school. So in a case like that, you would be able to use Meiser money because, again, that's above and beyond your obligation as a parent. Another thing to keep in mind is, very often, if you're really trying to do the numbers, and you talk, anyone here on a school board or ever was on a school board? Anybody can help me out with the numbers here? So I think if you ask people who work on a school board, I was told that much of your tuition money is really going toward the scholarship fund. How much is it, 30%?
Depends on the school.
So let's say our schools, I have no idea, but let's say it's 30%, argument's sake. So help me with the math here. If I pay $20,000 a year tuition, $10,000 a year tuition, so 30% of the money is $3,000. And we're assuming that $3,000 out of my 10 is going to go toward other children who can't even afford any tuition. Well, that's obviously a tzedakah. Obviously the $3,000, leaving all other factors aside, if the school assumes that 30% of everything that they're giving, of everything that I'm paying, is really going for other children who are underprivileged and cannot pay for their education, well then that, obviously the $3,000 we are allowed to give from Meiser, because that's not my obligation. That's a tzedakah obligation. We have an obligation to take care of our neighbors and take care of our community. But we don't have an obligation to educate other people's children. That's not my obligation as a parent. That's my obligation as a member of the community. But for that, obviously, I would be allowed to use Meiser money. I'll take all of your questions. But I think that just to give us a little bit of an understanding of the importance of Meiser, again, what we started with, the Gemara says in Tainus, don't go anywhere. I want to answer everyone's questions. But the Gemara does say in Tainus that this is one of the opportunities that we have where we can say, Bechanuni na bazos. We can actually test God on this matter. And we can say, God, look how much we're giving of ourselves. Look how much we're going out on the limb to give to other people. We expect that you are going to give us back in return a wonderful life. Give us back money. Make sure we're going to be able to sustain ourselves and take care of our children. And this is one of the examples, one of the only examples, the exception to the rule, where we have a right to talk like that in such a disrespectful manner, so to speak,